they can join in. So
right.
Anything specific you want to share or talk about or engage with? Or three?
I have a question. Three of us were praying and we were and engaging the courts the best of my ability. Yeah. and they were praying over some things, and then the Lord brought revelation, and then we prayed about some other stuff, and as we were praying about these other things that the Lord had revealed, I sensed in my spirit, perceived, didn't see, but perceived that all of a sudden this large arena, I would think, you know, it was like this, like stands almost, I would say, but I knew it was in court. All of a sudden this cheering started, and it started getting louder and louder, and I was wondering if these other guys were hearing it in their spirit. It was like people were, you know, they were standing their feet. It was like, and so I was taken back because I'm thinking, wait, this is court. This is heaven. That's like out of order. So yeah. I just wanted to see if I was all wet or if that is something that does happen.
Oh, yeah. You were engaging with the court of the upright and the men in white linen, and they cheer. They participate. And when you begin to engage in something they relate to, they're longing for us to be engaging in this dimension of stuff. And so sometimes they come, and when we go into the different courts, they basically come, and they, in those courts, they observe. Particularly I've seen observation in, when I've been in the Chancellor's Court, there's been a sense, and others, they've been, ooh, I feel surrounded. You know, I'm not here on my own. And that often is then, but yeah, the only way I can describe the Court of the Upright is that, I don't know if you know in the Star Wars films, in the where the Republic had their gathering and thinking Coruscant, I think the planet was called, there were all these sort of just around this amazing galleries and galleries and galleries of people, just like you say, like an arena. That's how it has appeared to me when I've engaged there. It's just like, wow, you know, we're not our own here. This is the, you know, the church of the firstborn enrolled in heaven. I mean, you know, this is we're part of this. You know, this is not separate from us. And that's why they're so enthused when we get stuff, and when we begin to, you know, step into things, they get really enthused. You know, so yeah, I mean, I would imagine that's part of, you know, where you were engaging, and they were just enthused by what you were doing and encouraging you to carry on. And it's like, go for it, you know.
Yeah, and it wasn't like dramatic that I knew that, but I still perceived it very very strongly. Still just getting like shadows and glimpses at times. They're becoming more prevalent. I'm able to start to engage in the garden of my heart a lot easier. Yep. And in Psalm 23, where I can almost at any time lay down in green pastures, and I sense the peace of the Lord. Yep. This is a tough journey. This is not like the night I got baptized with the Holy Spirit and I prayed all night in tongues and woke up with my hands in the air praying in tongues in the morning. Yeah. You know,
yeah.
This is a fight.
I think it's the fight because of the nature of what you are going to break into, because you are going to be an introduction to others for this, and therefore, if it was simple and easy and just, oh well, yeah, just it just happened, then you wouldn't have the personal experience and the testimony of how you've grown, how you've overcome, how you've pressed through, so that those that it isn't just easy for can relate. I mean, my whole life has been like that. You know, I've had to overcome in every forerunning experience I've had, you know, I feel that God is, his sense of humor is often at my expense, and it's just like everything has been a battle. You know, baptism in water, saw it in the Word of God, 16-year-old, okay, who's going to baptize me? Oh, there's no church in town that does baptism, you know, in water, which is like ridiculous, but actually we have no Baptist church. We had no one did it, but I was determined because I saw it in the Word of God, was absolutely convinced that this was a commandment as far as I was concerned, be baptized. So I went, found a church up the road 12 miles away that would baptize me. Well, within a few years we had a baptistry in our church because I pushed through, didn't give up, and that opened the door for something. And same with baptism of the Spirit. Nobody, you know, my church, Brethren Church, totally anti-baptism of the Holy Spirit and speaking in tongues and stuff. Didn't know anyone else. 3 years, did everything I possibly could to engage it, press through, and eventually that opened up the door, and then a whole lot of people followed in behind. You know, so it's always been like that for me. But it's been worth it because I've grown and learned to overcome and relate, because it really is important that we help people to be able to relate to our experiences. And it isn't easy for everybody, but that's the whole thing. It's, we can learn if we persevere and we keep practicing. And I think you are actually discerning and perceiving a lot more. Don't get hung up on the visual, because, you know, when our spirit steps in and engages, our spirit is engaging in a spiritual dimension. Your soul does not step in with you unless you're in some sort of trance. Your soul is here and your spirit is engaged there. So it's the spirit communicating to you. And if your spirit communicates to you in perception, and knowing, and just knowing what's going on, that's what mine does. Sometimes I have the visual experiences, but most of the time I know I can describe where I am by just engaging my spirit, because I've learned to tune in to the thoughts and engagements of the spirit, which is not visual but is descriptive of where I am and knowing. You know, my spirit operates that way all the time. That's how it works. You know, I practice every night when I go to sleep. I look to engage in sleeping in a place as I go to sleep. So I look to go to a place, and in going to a place, I go to my garden and I look to enter rest, because rest is different from sleep. And if my spirit can enter rest, then when I wake up in the morning, it's had a night of engagement in the realms of heaven, and I'm learning to remember, because when I wake up, I immediately look to engage, what did my spirit do last night? And I have things that come to me as I look to step in and engage it. I have practiced trying to engage my soul in that, because I know Ian Clayton teaches about the night watch, and, you know, keeping my soul awake at rest while my body is at sleep. And that actually is, you know, I have not found that as easy to do, but I'm working on it. But I'm not actually conscious in my conscious mind of what my spirit's doing at night, but when I wake up, I am connected to it often. So a lot of people's experiences are what you'd call ecstatic experiences of encounters that are trances or visions in a meeting or whatever. You can't just have ecstatic experiences every time you want to step into heaven. You know, I can't have one when I'm walking down the street or when I'm driving along the car. I need to be able to engage my spirit with my soul being conscious here so I can drive down the road. But my spirit can still be engaging in heaven, and I'll still be connected, and I'm actually still in full contact with heaven, but through the language of my spirit rather than through my natural eyes or even the eyes of my imagination, because that work much easier when you close your eyes and you slow down your brain waves to alpha waves to begin to exercise the right side of your brain. But you can't do that if you're driving down the road or walking down the road or if you're sitting at your desk doing something. So I think, you know, don't knock the perception of your receiving, because that actually is what you're tuning into, your spirit, rather than, you know, the eyes of your heart, which is great when you're, you know, lying down in green pastures and you're relaxed and you're at home, or you're, you know, that's great because you can begin to exercise your imagination and what, but actually the reality is you feel the peace of lying down, whether you're seeing it or not. So you're receiving the benefit of it, which is the end of the day, the point. You know, you are perceiving, which means you are seeing. Because that's what seeing means. It means perception. Whether that perception comes through auditory, visual, or any other format, you are receiving the revelation of what you are encountering, which is great for me. I mean, I would not be discouraged by that whatsoever. Because what you don't want to do is set up people to think it has to be full-blown technicolor, all vision, when they're just learning to engage their spirit, you know, because you can, oh, I can't do it, you know. Well, if you practice training your senses, you will be able to, just in different ways for different people. You know, because I know, it's like I know visual people. You know, we had a group here last night, and one of them was like very visual, very encounter orientated, but was like, well, they almost try and engage their mind to the vision to explain it while they're going, which creates a problem because they want to know, they want to figure it out, and it's not to be figured out; it's to be spiritually encountered. So your spirit receives the revelation and the frequency of it, and you contain that within your spirit to release it so that your mind can catch up. You know, a lot of the places I've been recently have been intense spiritual dynamics, but my mind is not actually caught up at all. I just know I've received a massive download of, because I've been looking into something, of revelation and frequency within my spirit that will draw me and lead me and guide me, and my mind will catch up once I begin to release the understanding of my spirit. And I find that I say things and do things, particularly engaging them on my mountain particularly, that my spirit just starts to release stuff as a flow, and I'm like, wow. Where did that come from? Well, it came from that time I looked into that firestone, or I looked into the presence of God, and my spirit began to resonate, but my mind wasn't fruitful at the time. But that is not important. The important thing is I'm led by the spirit. My soul will follow along if my spirit leads. So I need my spirit to lead, and that means spiritual revelation, not just intellectual understanding, because it will catch up, but if I'm always going to want to understand intellectually before I actually obey, then I'm going to be way back, because I will not be obeying very quickly, you know. So when God says something, I begin to do it, you know. Even if I don't understand it, I'll begin to do it. And sometimes he deliberately doesn't give me anything more than, can you do this? Which was very similar to what he did with Moses and with others. You know, he didn't give him the full blueprint. And particularly with Abraham, it was like, okay, leave everything and go and to a place I'm going to show you. But if he never actually obeyed, he wouldn't have been on the journey. I think you're probably engaging a lot more than you give yourself credit for. You know. In that. Okie dokie. So, any sort of anything else around that? I mean, I'm sort of.
Yeah. I had an interesting thing with my granddaughter. she had heard me listening to an episode where it was dragon slaying, and she was kind of taking all this in, but then she comes up to me and she says, calls me Papa. She says, Papa, she goes, that's a game my friends play. And I was like, what? She goes, yeah, they slay the dragons and they get the treasure out of the dragon. And she's like breaking all this down, you know? And I'm like, really? But when I thought about that later, I thought, wow, that's pretty amazing how, I don't know, how the enemy, you know, tries to duplicate things, you know, like, you know, in different aspects. I wasn't even sure how to think about that. That was either, you know, like, it's just in our DNA to, you know, some guy creating something, and it's a part of him that he really doesn't understand, and so it kind of goes off into this other track. You know, I just thought, wow, that's pretty crazy. Yeah. But I thought, wow, in the future, as this becomes more, you know, more visible, you know, there'll be some people kind of hopping on that train and, you know, trying to say that it's whatever, you know. What do you think about that? That kind of threw me for a loop.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think you mentioned you'd been to Hollywood and California or whatever, and Los Angeles, and, you know, there's a lot of creativity, because there are portals over places that release creativity, and right. A lot of these guys are picking up the prophetic release of these things, but of course they only interpret them through their filters, and therefore the sort of outcome or the way in which it's portrayed is often not in a full godly perspective in terms of what we would see, but they're picking something up, you know. And you know, you tend to see trends prophetically in some films and TV shows that are, those creative people are engaging in the spirit, although they don't aware of that, but that's what they're really doing. They're picking up, opening over these areas. And the reason, you know, that Hollywood is there is because there was always a portal of creativity over that place. Mm. You know, in a sense, it's like even the thing of Los Angeles, the city of angels. You know,
right.
There's something that was in the atmosphere around that has a redemptive purpose that releases these things. And there are creative people who pick up truth. They just don't understand it from a godly perspective, and therefore they can only outwork that truth through their filters. And so, you know, the outcomes of it often are, well, actually they've missed the point of that, but the principles are still there. You know, I pick up a lot of these trends, you know, and I sort of look for them, and I sort of think, okay, yeah, I can see, because actually this is what's coming. And the enemy will sometimes try and use them to desensitize people to certain things, maybe. But in a sense, for some of those things, like the game, you know, yeah, what are they picking up? Well, the truth of dragon slaying, you know, it's obviously in myth, George and the dragon, Saint George, you slayed the dragon. That was from a perspective right. of, you know, he represented a saint, a godly person who was killing a dragon, who was a terrorizing the nation or the town or the region. So, you know, there's sort of a mythology around it which is based in truth, which now more and more people are beginning to engage, you know. And it's like, I thought it was interesting when you said, you know, you talked to this guy, and when he started talking about spiritual things, it's like, oh, wow, yeah, there's something going on in that,
right.
Which I think is, you know, it is what it is. You know, I think part of the problem is because of the new agey type counterfeits, so many Christians are afraid of the real that they don't engage it. And religious spirits are only too happy to engage that and to turbocharge it so that it's off limits to us. when actually it is something that is a spiritual ability that has been given to us, but we have rejected it because of fear, and therefore others have taken it on and are using it for the wrong purposes in the power of the soul, illegitimately. But it's saying that there isn't truth, it's just that truth has been twisted, unfortunately. And the you know, even in terms of quantum physics, because those quantum physicists could not find a paradigm within the Christian culture for this outworking, they turned to an Eastern worldview because they couldn't find a Christian one. And therefore, a lot of them have then come to the conclusion of a cosmic consciousness and that sort of stuff, rather than a personal God. But 95% of what they write is absolute truth. Just their conclusion, which is a pantheist view, actually has missed the point of we can engage with the person of God who used and created these principles and laws and spiritual laws, which they're calling quantum physics, to administrate this realm from that spiritual realm. And so they've drawn a conclusion because the church, again, has basically, you know, effectively sort of turned their back on that stuff. Oh, we're not interested in that. That's not anything to do with us. And so they give no paradigm for people to enter into, whereas we're now actually restoring that paradigm so that there is a framework where quantum physics absolutely lines up with exactly how God created things and how things were formed out of that which doesn't exist visually, how he holds all things together by the word of his power, the vibrating strings that are available in everything, because he is in everything. But he is a person, and that's the where the enemy has drawn the line to try and deceive people. You know, and we have to regain that ground. We have to take back that atmosphere, and we need to take back that whole spiritual dynamics to show this is the real. This is counterfeit, but this is real. And when you engage the real, you get peace. When you engage the counterfeit, you actually get fear. And it's always a deposit of something negative when you engage the counterfeit, even though there may be a reduction in symptoms or even a healing, actually there is a deposit of far worse, which brings oppression. And that's the aim, you know, to oppress people rather than to bless them. And we need to claim back that ground. You know, I know a great number of people who are going out into the psychic fairs, and they're going and setting up, okay, we're going to give you true spiritual readings. You know, and we're actually going to disrupt all the spiritual stuff that's going on because we're going to bring light. And they're absolutely doing a fantastic job, you know, in terms of engaging that community who, let's face it, are all spiritually hungry. That's the reason they pursue these things in the first place. They're looking for truth. We just haven't offered them a good version of it. We've offered religion, and they don't want religion, they want reality, which right. is why we need to express reality in how we live a supernatural lifestyle, so that they will get drawn to that light, and they will then be drawn to Jesus, who we're holding up, and engage with him, and then find the truth. You know, and there is real in what they do, but it's not the greatest power. You know, I remember a story, I think Ryan Wyatt told it, that he was ministering in a place over a weekend and they saw lots of miracles and things. And this guy turned up at the pastor's office on the Monday morning basically saying, I want to know if this stuff is real. I've picked up a disturbance in the spiritual atmosphere. I want to know whether this is real. I'm the second highest warlock of this state, and I want to know whether this is real. And so he took the guy outside, and this was winter and snow on the ground, and he spoke to a tree, and it fully formed leaves and blossom in the middle of winter in an instant in front of him. And he's like, So he guided by the Spirit, laid hands on the guy, and absolutely laid him out in the Spirit, and the power of God came over this guy, and essentially he gave his life to God there and then, because that was a higher power. We weren't going to do party tricks. but he encountered the living God, and it was he knew what real power was, and he got saved, you know. And that guy could have been so intimidated by, oh my word, what is this? How I can't do that, but what I have, I give to you. And bang, this is real power. You are going to encounter the living God. You know, and I think there are confrontations with the prophets of Baal, if you like, of our new age generation, that we are going to reveal the real power that comes out of heaven. And I think that's exciting, because we're going to take back ground.
Yeah. Well, I noticed too, this one playwriter that I spent some time with, when I was conversing with him about, you know, just heaven, you know, different aspects and his creativity, you could see the countenance on his face changing, because it was like previously he didn't really have a touching post other than in the world of Hollywood, in the sense of all this wild imagination and all these different things going on. So he just kind of, you know, naturally gravitated toward that. And he even made a comment to me. He goes, I don't know how you even get into a church, you know, because he just felt that I was so out there, you know. But yeah. Yet he was like, well, I want to go where you go, you know, that type of thing. Yeah. So I realized after speaking to him, you know, they carry this, but it's just that there was no room or no direction, you know, in the sense of the reality of what, you know, they would carry in the sense of just, you know, things that are in the kingdom of heaven. And, and so they just express it ever how, you know, it's accepted by the world or whatever. So I could just see the whole, you know, God just totally captivating that whole world. And of course, there are many people in California that are influencing people like him in a very real way to, you know, to engage with, you know, with God and, you know, come into the things that he has. So it's just interesting to see all that unfolding.
Yeah. But, you know, that's what we've got to start seeing in the spiritual realm. That's where we start administrating government. That's where we start taking ground and manifesting the reality of the kingdom that will be undeniable. You know, Paul said in Corinthians, you know, I'd not come with wise and persuasive words, but demonstrations of the Spirit and power, so that effectively your salvation wouldn't be based on men, but the power of God. And we have to genuinely demonstrate the true power of the kingdom. You know, and that isn't just, okay, yeah, the healing and the sort of some of the things we see now, but actually it is going to encompass a whole load more of creative ability to bring God's kingdom and to bring transformation, and to bring the rule of God and to subdue things, to bring them under our feet. You know, Psalm 8, you know, we're crowned with glory and majesty. We are crowned with glory and majesty. And he's put everything under our feet. And we need to actually take that position again. You know, I mean, I'm sort of spending quite a lot of time in Romans 8 just meditating around what it is for creation to be set free, and what it is to answer the groan of creation, and what it is to be manifested as sons of God. And this little phrase which says, you know, that creation is going to be free from the bondage and brought into the freedom of the glory of the children of God. And it's like, wow, what does that look like? I want that. I want to know what it is to be living in freedom. So I need to go back and look at the beginning. What was God's intention? What did he intend us to live in as his children? So then I need to see that manifested now. So what is the glory that is going to be manifested through us, which is going to bring the whole of creation back into freedom? And it's like, it wasn't God's glory. It was the glory that he's given us to obviously reflect his glory, but he's entrusting it into sons like he entrusted it into Adam and Eve to pattern earth like heaven. And I know we get to redo it, but we've got to reclaim the high ground. You know, those that were on the high ground had the advantage. We need to reclaim the higher ground in the kingdom, because, you know, Satan took Jesus to the highest mountain. It wasn't Mount Everest. You know, it was the highest mountain in the top of the realm that he could engage in, which was the top of the realm of the kingdom of God in the spiritual realm. And he showed him all the kingdoms of the world, not just the physical earth. He showed him all the spiritual kingdoms, all the realms that he had authority over, all the atmosphere, everything. And then it was like, okay, if you bow down to me, I'll give you all this. Well, of course, we know that Jesus went and took that back and now has the keys and now has all authority in heaven and earth. And he's now released that authority to us. We just have to now be mature enough to use it, you know, for the glory of God and the ever-increasing expansion of his kingdom, you know. And let's stop trying to build church, because he said he would build the ecclesia. We've spent the last 2,000 years trying to build church when he said he would build it. And, you know, those who, if the Lord doesn't build the house, we labor in vain. And so we've done a lot of vain laboring, because we've been trying to do something that he said he would do. What did he tell us to do? Go and make disciples. That was the commission. Go and make disciples. In effect, actually, go and disciple the nations. Go and show the nations of the world what it is to be a nation under God, to be a ecclesia gathered under an open heaven. Show the nations what it's like to bring kingdom government, what it is to establish the rule of God. Now, within the first century, they turned the whole world upside down, because they took that message and they made disciples and they took territory, and then the devil changed his tactic, because he tried persecution. That didn't work. That just spread the gospel out even further. Then he tried something else. Then he tried something else. Then basically it's like, okay, if I can't beat them, I'm going to pollute and corrupt them. So let's get Constantine in on this. And let's turn this into a religious system. And let's remove the apostles and prophets and the supernatural dimension to this. And let's bring pastors in who are going to be all our old priests who are now going to get new jobs. And now let's connect this together and politically control through this. And then we go into the Dark Ages, you know. Now we've got to claim back our rightful place and to administer the kingdom from our rightful place of authority and begin to effect that out into the world. And I think we're beginning to start to hear the sound that's calling us to it. But the battle lines are drawn over this stuff. You know, I've even today, I was talking to a guy today who I've been mentoring for 12 months, so helping him to establish a foundation for church, for a new establishing something. Benches are three from the beginning. You know, it's been great, because I've just helped him through the process. He's embraced it. They've got their mountains. They've got their scrolls. You know, they're starting on the right foundation. Now the opposition's coming, because they're all sort of students or guys who are involved in that, and now their student ministry is basically renouncing Ian Clayton and renouncing that this is all New Age, and all the parents are all this and the other. So the line is drawn. You've been teaching about angels, you know, and so now it's like, okay, what am I going to do? Well, you know, I need to be obedient to God, and so he's going to, I'm following what God's saying, you know. If you want me not to do anything in this, then fine, but I'm going to follow what God's saying. And so challenges. So for him, that's a major challenge, that the enemy is trying to draw the lines. And we're going to all have to face some of that in the time to come and be ready for it. And be ready for a demonstration of it. Not a defense, not a defensiveness, not entering into arguments and back and forward, but a demonstration, the fruit. You know, and I've encouraged him to go back to the guy and say, okay, are you willing to adopt the Gamaliel approach? If this is of God, then you certainly do not want to denounce it. If it isn't of God, then it will come to nothing. Or are you going to be the state police and try and defend the church from this doctrine, which is what a lot of people do, and that's where some of the battle lines are drawn right now. We've got to be really ready to face those things and not be intimidated, and to be willing to step out in the convictions that we have in God. And okay, if the flood comes, okay, I'm going to take it, and I'm going to overcome it, because actually I know my call, I know my destiny, and I'm not going to back off for anybody or anything. You know, and I know some really powerful ministries who, you know, I know one particularly published some stuff on their website that a lot of people that she was connected to just reacted to, and rather than sticking her ground, she took it off the website and backed down. Even though she knew it was true, she didn't want to offend. But the reality is, it's God's responsibility to deal with that and those people. If those people don't want relationship with us because they see that we're this or that and the other, are we prepared to stand our ground? Because I think it will come, you know. And, you know, am I going to sacrifice personal relationships for the sake of the kingdom if that's necessary? Obviously, reconciliation and is the key, and finding ways of developing a culture of honor so that we can deal with the problems that are there rather than these things. But when a religious and political spirit, you know, the leaven of Herod and Pharisees, starts to try and pervade, we must stand against it and not come under that political and religious spirit, because it will be quite manipulative and powerful if we allow it to be. And I think there is a warning, and I can see it in the spiritual realms, and I can see it with certain ministries who are beginning to panic and come out and say some things that they probably shouldn't really be saying, because they're caught up in this, you know. I really want people to cross over and not wander around the wilderness and die there, you know. But actually, it means adopting new ways and crossing over into a new dimension and leaving the old ways, even though they were great and powerful and miracles and provision and all sorts of stuff. Now we're stepping into a new level of responsibility. Are we willing? It is a challenge. But that's why, really, I think a lot of us are nameless, faceless people who aren't bothered about reputation, really. Because it's like, I'm not really bothered what anyone really thinks, to be honest. Because I haven't got a reputation. It died a long time ago. So I've got nothing to protect. You know? And if someone says nasty things, well, I'm just going to bless them. And that will be my attitude, bless you. I'm not going to fight you. I'm just going to bless you. But here we go. So, yeah. Okay.
Sharing what he believed he was seeing, and was like, okay, is this, I'm not sure how real this is, but, and I think that's an example that people actually experience and see more than they realize they do. Yep. And sometimes it takes someone just saying, no, this is. I mean, years ago, I remember stepping out on things that I didn't know it was real, but I still just stepped out on it because I believed that it was. Yep. And I've known Mike for years, and he's very apostolic in his spirit. Mm-hmm. And it's no wonder you wouldn't get some flack, Mike, just spiritually, because, you know, he just naturally carries those things. So I get excited when I see, you know, people like that, just like, okay, you know, it opens up a gate. You know, once you realize, no, this is real, then this huge gate just begins to open up, and all these things, you know, start unfolding. And it's like, no, it was there all the time, and you were actually engaging in many different ways all the time. And And it seems like it just takes certain people to come along and say, no, this is kingdom, this is real. Because of, you know, what are we going to compare it to? Our culture of, you know, what we've seen for years and years. Yeah. You know, how is it that you think that the gifting, you know, I know gifting has always been the primary focus in the church. And, you know, I relate to a lot of different people, obviously. I think we all do that flow in just a lot of strong areas of gifting. But why is it that, what do you think the reason that we, the barrier doesn't necessarily get broken where, you know, like gifting's the epicenter, and it's great, it's wonderful, and we need it in the earth, but we're just not able to break over into this more kingdom of heaven reality where gifting is really a byproduct of that rather than seemingly the other way around. I mean, is it the attention? Is it the building of ministry? Is it?
Yeah, I do believe that God has restored truth over the last 400 or 500 years in reality. He's restored through, you could say, revivals or awakenings. That type of experience is to restore truth. But rather than then embracing the next truth and adding that to this truth so we get a multiplication, there has been this religious political spirit which has then protected the truth, turned it into a denomination, and then anchored it into this is it, and therefore is not prepared to pass the baton on and move to with fresh revelation. And you know, I can sympathize in a way, because I can understand that once you are operating in a ministry or you're stewarding a ministry, you get caught up in maintaining it. And if you don't maintain it, then your livelihood's at stake, people's livelihoods at stake. You've developed this business almost around it, and then you're then trapped. Well, like, how can I move forward into this new? Because I would have to let go of this, and I've built my reputation on this. I have a teaching series about this. I've built our whole ministry about doing this, and now actually God is saying, hey, the pillar of cloud and fire has moved. Are you going to move with it? And so, you know, a whole generation decided not to go into the promised land. You know, a whole generation decided not to cross, even though they had been building up to going in. It'd been given to them, everything, but they didn't go. You know, so there are people who, there seems to be a cost that is too much for them to bear in their soul. They've invested something in it, and it's hard to let go, you know. And I do believe that right now, I think really for the last, I think probably almost 40 years, I think 1975, I think, was a turning point when God released something into the earth. And he has begun to release the different things of prophetic and apostolic, and you have those things which then backed onto the healing and the other movements over the centuries. But the whole purpose of all those ministries were to equip the saints. End of story. Not to do it for them, but to equip the saints to the ministry of the kingdom. And what tends to happen is that they've built ministries. Rather than actually ministering and equipping, they've built a ministry which relies on them delivering that ministry. And I love, you know, when you look into the 50s, 40s, 50s, you see the healing revivalists and, you know, Branham and Jack Coe and A.A. Allen and a lot of those guys. It was all about them. You know, some of them had great things that they did, but it was about them. They went into a ministry meeting. They had a massive tent. Hundreds of thousands of people came. They did the ministry. But then you get someone like Joan, Francis and Joan Hunter, and her husband, I can't remember his name, but they began to get this anointing for healing, and rather than go and be the, we're going to minister the healing, they went in to train a ministry team wherever they went to equip them to do the healing. And they just opened a door, and they carried something with them that they invest in others. And then all of a sudden, you're equipping the body to heal, not just... And you actually, that was the turning point for when those healing revivalists began to wane, and then you began to get healing ministries evolve. You know, healing on the streets we have in the UK, which they go out on the streets and they begin to minister healing. There are healing rooms, and it's not about one person, it's equipping people to release healing. And I think that is the key. And I think a lot of the ministries that have been established have been that, a ministry which is based around a person rather than about how do we equip others, you know, to and give this away. And actually, I do myself out of a job. You know, I want to do myself out of a job. I don't want to be mentoring people and people be dependent on me to open up doors for them. I want to introduce them to something that they can follow through and engaging and become their own personal lifestyle. So I'm, you know, any mediatorial thing is harping back to a religious system. And anything that provides a covering above, to me, is built a system which is not the kingdom. Because everything that we do in terms of ministry is a foundation that others can stand on. And we release people to live under an open heaven. Anything that sets up that I cover you and you cover others and they cover others is the old order of things that God wants to dismantle. Because if I'm a foundation, and apostolic and prophetic foundations are what form the blueprints of ecclesia, if you like, I want people to stand on me as a foundation and to go higher and further than I go. And I want them to be under an open heaven, and I want to engage them in finding their mountains. I don't sit over them on a mountain. I want to be lifting them up and carrying them into there and releasing them into their government. I'm not over anybody. God is over me and God is over you, and we live under an open heaven. But if you're living in a system that you've lived under, well, I'm covered by this person and they covered that person, you limit and create a ceiling. And I've had this locally in a situation where locally someone I know was involved in a church stream, if you like, that was very much covered or that sort of platform-led type thing. And they found that people kept going into leadership and then left. Kept going into leadership, left. Kept going into leadership, left. People who were just sort of generally just part of the church, they seemed quite happy. Anyone who got into Christian leadership, they got there, and all of a sudden they were oppressed. They were controlled. They were not by the people deliberately doing it, because they were part of a system that did it. Now, you know, over the last few years, I've been encouraging this guy and working with him, and we've been friends. And now he's decided, hey, I'm not going around this mountain anymore. I am going to sever these ties, and I'm going to lay a foundation that brings people under an open heaven and equips them to engage in heaven. So it's not about experts. It's not about only some people can do this. You know, how many people I've read books about people going to heaven. No one told anyone else how to do it. It was just... this was my experience, and now I'm using that to create a ministry which is going to be able to do this, this, and this. Not, hey, we can all go, and this is how we go together, and I want to encourage you to go, which is what this new order is about. It's releasing people. You know, it's encouraging people. It's nurturing people, and it's not being over people. You know, it's like, I love Bill Johnson. It's like, you know, let's our ceiling be the floor for the next generation. Let's make sure we pass on, you know, so that the next generation carry everything that we carry, and we've passed it on, we've invested in them so that they can go further, you know, which I think is what the whole Joshua generation order of Melchizedek's about. You know, it's about releasing the next generation to go further, living in a totally different dimension. You know, but it's we're in this transition, and transitions are always really, really uncomfortable. They just are, you know, because the old suddenly stops working effectively, and the new is not fully embraced. So you're in this position of, have I got a choice? Can I keep flogging this dead horse to see if it's going to ride again? Or am I going to get on a new horse and I don't know where it's going, but actually this is different, you know? And I think that's where God is calling us right now. Are we going to embrace the new? To embrace the new, we have to let go of the old. And we have to pick up that pioneering Caleb spirit, a different spirit. You know, and that different spirit is about, hey, let's take the next generation into their inheritance. And let's get them into it and go for it. And yeah, we've spied out the land, we've forerunned, we've been in, we've seen it's good, and now we want to give a good report. You know, and that's what I think my call is. I want to give a good report of what it's like to be engaged in heaven so that others would just long to be there as well. And as you know, my little bit that I can play in doing that, you know, I'm just gonna do to the capacity that I've got to do it, and I encourage others to do the same. You know, you guys who have people that you're engaging with, just carry them in your hearts and just begin to nurture and release them into this stuff so that they can really start to embrace who they really are in the kingdom, and that all the restraints will come off, you know, all the barriers will come down, heaven is open. You know, and we will just see a movement of taking our inheritance and begin to administer our inheritance, and the whole landscape will change. You know, in readiness for being prepared for whatever's coming. You know, so anyway, so yeah, there. Right, I think I will.